Welcome to the Casual Comics Cast.
Sorry. Hey, welcome back to the Casual Comics Cast, everybody. I'm your regular host, Joe, the Casual Comics Guy. And today with me, I've got regular dude, Jeff.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing today, man?
I am groovy, dude. How are you?
You are keeping the groovy train rolling, which I appreciate.
Consistency. Suddenly craved dog food.
The groovy train is key in branding.
Yes.
We got it. Groovy. We got it this time.
Groovy.
Today, Jeff, I asked you to read a few comics with me. I hope people will appreciate hearing about the writer we're going to talk about today, Mark Russell. He's somebody that I first encountered a while ago. In reading some of the Ahoy comics that we talked about a couple episodes ago, and we'll talk about some of his comics today. But first, just wanted to catch up with you on comic news, comic the world of sort of what's going on. And the big one is The Batman just came out. Have you seen Yes. The Batman?
No, I have not. I want to so badly, but schedules just haven't been working out.
So no spoilers for you for The Batman today.
Yeah, no, that'd be bad.
Okay. What else is happening in the world of comic books there, Jeff?
Well, in the world of comic movies,
it
seems like DC is playing musical chairs with their release schedule.
That is true. Because you're a DC fan, what are the DC ones that are on your horizon? You're like, I gotta, this is the one that I'm locked into.
Every single one of them.
Really? Everyone?
Let's be honest. Right now, the one that I'm looking forward to the most is the League of Super Pets.
The League of Super Pets. I am actually very excited for that one, too. You got what? Keanu Reeves?
Yeah, as Batman.
It's Batman.
Whoa, I'm so dark.
And I think, you know, for people who don't know much about that, is a deal. That's a deal in comic books, is that, like, way back in the day, every superhero sort of had a superpowered equivalent that was an animal. So Superman.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Write it down. Superman.
Superman had Crypto, the super dog.
Crypto. Had an awesome TV show already.
Yes.
Crypto, the super dog. I loved it. Batman.
Batman had Ace the Bat Hound.
Right.
Yeah.
The Flash?
The Flash? I don't know.
I think there was a cat named Streaky, at least maybe from the cartoons that I'm...
Now, that sounds familiar, but I don't remember him being necessarily with The Flash, but he very well could have been.
Maybe I'm just linking them together, because you'd think a fast cat named Streaky would be with The Flash. I don't know.
Yeah. Wasn't there a Super Monkey, too?
There was Beppo.
The Super Monkey. There you go. That's what I was thinking.
Beppo, Supergirl had a super horse.
But of course.
Obviously.
As one does.
We'll have to dive into when League of Super Pets is closer to some of these, because that gets creepy. Supergirl and her horse, because he turns into a dude that she's in love with.
Wait, and then, no. Flag on the play. No, it doesn't happen that way.
I believe it does.
Oh, my God.
But I don't know any other major super animals that I'm missing of the pet persuasion. Wonder Woman had not much. Aquaman did have a dolphin. Am I right?
Well, he rode a seahorse on the Super Friends, which never made sense to me.
Underwater, he rode a seahorse, but above the water, he rode on the back of two dolphins tethered together.
Yes. When he wasn't riding on his Aquaman jet ski. Which, again, made no sense to me.
Right. So, good call on that. People should be excited about DC's League of Super Pets. That's exciting. Things that were on my radar, it sounds like, because I'm the Marvel fan, sounds like possibly Blade maybe coming up in the Marvel universe sooner.
I hear he is going to make his debut on Disney Plus and not in theaters.
In which series?
I saw a headline in passing, and it said something about just a special.
Oh, that's right. I believe it is. And there's Disney that Marvel's going to do a Halloween special.
Oh, cool.
Blade will show up in, which could be cool.
Yeah. Are they going to revive Paul Lynn for that?
They should. Gosh, we're old, Jeff. Because you know what I were talking about? You know what I'd love to see a revival of? The superhero roast.
Oh, no, no. No, you don't. No, trust me. You don't want to see that.
I believe that's available on Amazon Prime for streaming for free.
It was on when DC had their own streaming service. It was on there.
Yeah.
And since that broke up, it probably is on Amazon. I know that there are video like DVDs available, but there's no earthly reason to get your hands on that. You'd probably want to watch the failed Justice League pilot before you watch those roasts. And really? That's saying a whole lot.
I don't know. I remember seeing it when I was a kid and I thought it was pretty amazing.
Well, yeah, when you were a kid, it was great. But now it's like, oh my God, there's like some serious racist stuff going on in there. It's really not good.
All right. Well, I guess I have not seen it in a long time because I don't recall any of that.
Yeah, it's better left on the ash heap.
So big thumbs down from Jeff on the superhero roast.
Yeah.
Gosh, those were the days when just you were dying as a kid to see any kind of superhero on TV for any reason at all.
And now, absolutely.
It's like you can't get away from it. It's like it's over. Yeah,
they are ubiquitous.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, like Chicken Man. He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
Hey, that one completely passed me by, but I will go with it. You and I will explain Chicken Man to me because I don't know what Chicken Man is.
Chicken Man was a radio series of like really short bits that were syndicated out. And they were they weren't always campy and corny, but when I remember them, they certainly were. I've got an album downstairs of Chicken Man episodes. That I found at a used record store. I'm like, oh yeah, that's coming home with me.
How does somebody in their right mind be like, well, I got this old Chicken Man record, and obviously I don't want to throw it away because somebody probably wants this. I'm going to take it into a record shop because obviously somebody's going to want to rebuy this.
And sure enough,
bingo, bango, bongo, Jeff got a Chicken Man record.
Here, please take my hard-earned money. I want this.
Don't tell me you paid more than a buck for that thing.
Oh, probably 8 to 10.
Oh, geez, Jeff. All right. Well,
it's Chicken Man. I mean, come on.
Chicken Man. Do you know what does Chicken Man look like? Or is it purely audio adventures of Chicken
it's
Man?
A radio show, Joe. Right. So
but like on the cover of the Chicken Man record, did it have an illustration of Chicken Man?
No. No. It was just the adventures of Chicken Man. He's everywhere. He's everywhere.
Chicken Man flies by night, or does he?
If you leave Chicken Man out overnight, he will gather flies.
Oh man, well that's some amazing. As you can tell, it's a dead time for comic book news because we are like it's like the eye of the hurricane, right?
Yeah,
we're a couple weeks away from Moon Knight. We're a couple months out now. The countdown is on for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
Mm-hmm.
League of Super Pets is when?
May, June, somewhere around there.
Okay, so we're heading into the long hot summer of superheroes.
Hey, Shazam 2 Fury of the Gods got bumped up by 6 months, so we're gonna get that around Christmas time.
Ooh, Merry Christmas to Jeff.
Merry Christmas to Jeff.
Shazam.
Yeah.
No Isis this time?
There's some problems with the name, and okay. I mean copyright issues.
People don't even remember that anymore. People don't even know what we're talking about. That is an unfortunate name for a superhero, though.
Well, I mean, it's an Egyptian goddess, so I mean, which came first? Well, the Egyptian goddess certainly did, and that's what the superhero is based on.
The more unfortunate thing was the person I saw who had it. There was a heavy metal band also named Isis, and the person had that tattooed on their arm. Mm. Maybe we want to get that taken care of, a little laser zip, zip, zap.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe make it say Crisis
on infinite Earths.
Jinx.
There you go. So that's sort of the comic news we got for you today. But really, the heart of this podcast is going back through the oeuvre view, an overview of the Hanna-Barbera like adaptations of Mark Russell. So Mark Russell is somebody we talked about on our Ahoy podcast. He's getting to be rather ubiquitous of a writer. And maybe I use that word twice already, which then people will be like, this guy has a word a day, literally a word a day. He's gonna eat it into the ground. So I thought, you know, his books that we've read so far were fun. The books read of his were One Star Squadron, The Monster Serials from Edgar Allan Poe's Tales of Terror. And have you read anything else of his?
My Bad. Was he involved in My Bad?
He did some of. So we're going to take a quick break and we will be back to talk about his first foray into adaptations for DC Comics, which was The Flintstones.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. You wouldn't like us when we're angry. The Flintstones, number one. Flintstones, meet the Flintstones again for the first time as Fred and Barney reunite for Mark Russell's modern take on Hanna-Barbera's most famous Stone Age family. Welcome to Bedrock, where Paleolithic humans head to dinner for a taste of artisanal mammoth after shopping at Neanderthal and Big Men's Clothing, where Wilma shows off her modern art, and where, if you take a plane, you could end up sitting on the literal tail section. Join Fred and Barney as Mr. Slate sends them on a mission to show some Neanderthals a night on the town in hopes of luring them into this new system called working for a living. Is Fred's ship about to come in? Find out when the gang learns how the 1% live here in Bedrock, home of the world's first civilization and the modern Stone Age family, the Flintstones.
Da-da-da-da-da.
So there's the Flintstones, a preview for you, a little taste of what Jeff and I were reading. The Flintstones comic came out in, I believe, June 2016 is when the first issue. Gosh, Michael and her episode issue thing. It's like contagious. First issue was published in June of 2016. It was a 12-issue miniseries, and It's weird because, you know, Mark Russell, as much as I have loved his stuff when I've read it, he doesn't have that kind of name that grabs you. You're like, oh, this is the same. It's like it's sort of a generic. I'm sure I'm not offending him by saying Mark Russell isn't the one that like you're going to read a Neil Gaiman book. And if you read another one, you're like, I think I've seen this guy's name somewhere before. Mm-hmm. It's like I read multiple Mark Russell things before of his books before I even clicked with me that it was the same guy. But then I had remembered reading an article on Slate.com where they were talking about this amazing Flintstones comic that had come out. And I was like, oh, then when I went back and started researching Mark Russell and his work, and I'm like, let's take a look at his stuff. I'm like, oh, this is the same Flintstones comic I had been hearing about. It was called a bleak, brilliant comic reboot of the Flintstones. So I don't want to hype it up or like overstate. I know the last time we went with the hype on Saga and you were left a little, not so much, but this is Mark Russell's like first, I think this is his first work for DC Comics and it's him at, you know, adapting that property. What do you think, Jeff, of the Flintstones?
Well, I got to tell you, of the three books we're going to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
This one falls in the middle.
Okay.
And that is, it's a weird thing to adapt into the style that he adapts it into.
Yep.
But I'm going with it. I'm like, okay, yeah, okay. This is so interesting.
Tell me about you and the Flintstones. What do you think about the Flintstones just as a general property outside of this comic adaptation? What do you think of the cartoon?
The original TV series, which was basically the Honeymooners in prehistoric times. Right. Wonderful. It was a primetime cartoon, and it was voiced by Alan Reed and Mel Blanc and Gene Vanderpile and Bea Benaderet. They were wonderful. I'm a voice actor nerd. Sorry.
The sad thing is, I tried to hurry and do some prep for this podcast, and that's why I'm stumbling over June of 2016. And like, I'm like, well, how much will we have? Because we didn't do much prep. That wasn't even prep. You knew who the voice actors were.
Of course I know who the voice actors are in the Flintstones. Are you kidding me? Mel Blanc, for one, is the god of cartoon voiceovers.
Sure. Well, Mel Blanc. Got it.
And he's hilarious in live action too. But you know, that's
another. Who are these other fellas?
Alan Reed was the voice of Fred.
Is that the skipper?
No.
Oh, that's Alan Hale.
That's Alan Hale Jr., actually.
Oh, not senior.
No, because if you looked at Alan Hale Sr., you'd be like, oh, that's the skipper from. They looked exactly like each other. It was uncanny. But Alan Reed.
Go ahead.
Alan Reed was an actor and a voiceover guy, and he was the voice of Fred Flintstone.
Okay. What else would I have seen him in?
A lot of things, and you would never know that he was the guy you were looking for.
Okay. But he was Fred.
Mm-hmm.
Got it. So yeah. An amazing voice cast. And you liked the show. You kind of guess.
Of course. I mean, everybody loved the Flintstones. It was always on from the beginning that the beginning of my consciousness to, you know, the time when I became a teenager and started having, you know, friends and going places and not watching TV so much.
Right. And started fighting with your friends about Betty or Wilma, who's hotter.
No, hands down. It was Betty. I'm, you know what? It's Betty. It's Bailey Quarters. It's Marianne. I'm all away.
All right. I think this was, though, this started the classics. I guess let's go back to the Honeymooners of like the, the schlubby fat dude who's with like a wife who's way out of his league.
Well, I mean, on the cartoon, not so much. I mean, she was okay, but in this comic book, she's kind of hot. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Wilma shouldn't be hot.
Oh, come on, Jeff. There's more than one boy who was like, hey, I got a little thing for Wilma.
I'm sure, probably. I never looked at them that way. I really, truly didn't.
I didn't either. Yeah. Just to be clear, I'm talking about other people.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, when Anne Margrock showed up on the Flintstones, it's like, yeah, okay.
So let's talk a little bit about the comic adaptation. The comic opens with like sort of Museum of Natural History, present day.
Yes, right? It does.
And here's a Neanderthal.
Lorenzo,
who's in the exhibit. And then they're like, I wonder what his life was like. And then flashback to the town of Bedrock 100,000 years ago. And this is where I was kind of like, okay, I'm getting the Flintstones vibe because it's a little map layout of the town. And it's all of the classic puns that you would expect from the Flintstones. It's like,
and then some,
right? Which one was your favorite? Okay, out of everything on this whole list of all the businesses that people can go visit here in Bedrock, which one was your favorite?
Well, let's see here. Da, 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 da. I gotta say, what I perceived to be a gay bar.
Yeah.
In the background?
Yeah. Okay.
The Homo erectus? I mean, it seemed kind of obvious that they were making a joke that in that direction. I didn't necessarily find it funny, but I'm like, wow, they're that's where they're going. Huh, interesting.
Could be. I was going with Whammoth, Bammoth, thank you, Mammoth.
And what exactly do they sell there?
I like it. I like it. There's the Outback Snake House, you know.
Yes. Tar pit.
Tar pit instead of Target, you know. So, but that's kind of what the Flintstones did. They just took
all the
anything
time
and changed the name to be slightly about rocks.
Yeah, absolutely. And when they had guest stars on, they would do that to their names as well. I mean, that was their thing.
Exactly. But this take. It follows sort of the classic, what I know of Mark Russell is everything's a little bit more, it's a bent towards, you know, modern sensibilities because there's a lot of times a more political or social point behind it. And this comic gets to be very much about, because the original cartoon of the Flintstones was just a normal dude working a blue collar job, wanting to get promoted into a white collar position. And it takes that and it like, puts a magnifying glass on the differences between the working class and the upper class and Fred's aspirations to get there, because the crux of issue one here is he has hired three new Cro-Magnons that he wants. Mr. Slate is like, I need you to get these three Cro-Magnons to sign on here because it's amazing for two reasons. One, each one of them has like the ability and the strength of like two normal people, and they don't really get the concept of money. So easily exploitable.
Yeah. And that made me a little uncomfortable. I'm like, what? Mr. Slate is like wanting to deal in slave trade? What's going on?
Well, it's not, it makes it, it doesn't go there. It just says, I took it as more that he can underpay them because they have no idea what the value of money is. They're big, okay. They're stronger than normal because he does talk to them about their salary, but because they have no idea of what the concept of money is, they don't know whether that's fair or not. And
okay.
That was, because they did get into an interesting, it was a side comment about some business that it's like their job is making birds into slaves, because literally in the Flintstones, everything is like done by a bird, like inside a camera. There's a little bird in there inside your.
Oh, sure. The record player is a bird. Sure.
Right. And so they did make a gag about that, about like the enslavery of birds in order to keep the society moving correctly.
Yeah. And every one of them will take an aside to the camera at one point and say, well, it's a living.
Right.
You know?
And I think that's what I appreciated about this comic, was it did put a spotlight on some of that, and it gave it a little bit more of a serious overtone. And then
very much so.
Yeah. Fred's outfit was freaking me out a little bit. He's got a little more snug of an outfit than he used to.
He looked like the Fred from the live action Flintstone films.
Okay.
I thought
he's super muscle bound here.
Okay, except for that part.
Well, and I mean, to be like, I don't want to be graphic about it, but it's like, it's pretty snug down in that region.
I wasn't looking. I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
I get it. You were distracted by Wilma. And how wrong.
I don't look at these characters in that way.
Oh, Jeff, come on. Come on.
I mean, it was only recently that I found out that Fred and Barney would sneak off behind the garage to smoke Winston cigarettes because they sponsored the TV show.
Yeah, that I see. Because that was in the black and white days, right? That wasn't like
I think
part
so.
Of the that wasn't like part of the actual cartoon. That was like
it was a commercial within this show. Yeah, back when cigarettes were allowed to be advertisers.
Right. So this comic does get into a lot more of consumerism, yep. Class issues, things like that, mm-hmm. that I thought were, you know, wrapped in a packaging that is Flintstones nostalgia that might make it a little bit more palatable to audiences, which I thought was clever. And, you know, it's one of those where you could take a Flintstones adaptation and be like, oh my gosh, here's just them, you know, translating this comic to the page and not doing anything new with it. I appreciate it that at least he's doing something new with the property.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like we talked about with One Star Squadron, there's a ton of little sight gags going on around the pages too.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed it. Sounds like you were moderate on it. Was there anything in particular that bothered you about the book? Were you like, I wish X, Y, or Z?
Mr. Slate being such a monumental fill in the blank.
But wasn't he in the cartoon also? He was a jerk.
I mean, he was the annoying boss, you know, and the overbearing boss, but he wasn't evil. I mean, I felt like Slate was just downright evil in this comic book.
Well, yeah, you might be right. He went from annoying to evil, when they say evil, he's I don't think he's intentionally evil. He's annoying in the way that like real capitalists of his magnitude are annoying, which is the world is about money. Like I said, what I like about Mark Russell is his stuff can be humorous, but then also get into really serious topics where like there's one point where Mr. Slate's like looking out over the landscape. And he's like, he's like, there is no afterlife. This is all there is, and you have to leave your imprint on the entire world because your name being remembered is all there is. Live this life. And I was like, wow, that's kind of dark philosophy for the Flintstones.
Yeah. And quite honestly, I think perhaps a bit heavy-handed. I would have appreciated a little bit more lightness in this book.
Yeah, well, I have not read the rest of the issues yet. I'm interested enough that I probably will. So I will, and they're probably available at your library because they were a very popular comic, apparently sold very well. So there's two collected editions. If you read them too, we'll catch up and see what you thought about the Flintstones when you finish it. But I think you're right. It is his first foray into this type of thing. And I think what at least I experienced in One Star Squadron is maybe it's a little bit more beneath the surface, and it's very kind of obvious. You don't have to look hard to find what the points he's trying to make are in this book.
Yeah, I think as a writer, he in the One Star Squadron, in My Bad, and all those the ones we read before, I think he's probably found the balance between the lighthearted, which he does really, really well when he does it, and the whatever social message that he wants to kind of throw in. Well, but in this one early on, I think he hasn't quite found that yet.
Yeah. Fascinating. And you know, maybe we can think about, you know, at some point when, you know, when One Star Squadron wraps up, I'd love to just chat about the differences that then end up between those two, because it seems like he's examining very similar issues in this and in One Star Squadron. Working class, upper class, like what it's like to live in a consumer society. But you're right. My experience so far is it's a little bit more subtle and a little bit actually more enjoyable because it's more subtle in One Star Squadron.
Right. Right. Absolutely. I would agree with you 100%.
All right. So that's the Flintstones. I don't have a fun rock type pun. Maybe you can think up one before we come back, Jeff, on how to come back from this break. But we're going to take a short one. I got to get a little glass of water. Got to wet the whistle. And you advised me to have some non-crunchy snacks nearby.
Yes. So got to keep that blood sugar up.
Right. We'll take care of the blood sugar and the hydration levels, and we will be right back to talk about Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles.
Heavens to Murgatroyd.
You're listening to your friendly neighborhood casual comics cast. Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles. Number one.
It's 1953. While the United States is locked in a nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union, the gay Southern playwright known as Snagglepuss is the toast of Broadway. But success has made him a target. As he plans for his next hit play, Snagglepuss becomes the focus of the House Committee on Un-American Activities. And when powerful forces align to purge show business of its most subversive voices, no one is safe.
Refreshing. That's how I would describe the writer of this week, Mark Russell. We're talking about the books of Mark Russell here on the Casual Comics Back. So thanks for sitting with us, everybody, and revisiting the history of Mark Russell and his books with DC Comics that are based off of licensed sort of Hanna-Barbera properties. We just talked about the Flintstones, and now we're going to talk about Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles, which this came out probably about a year and a half after the Flintstones. And so maybe, you know, lesson learned from the last conversation there is like, what was your experience with Snagglepuss before reading this comic? Like, how much did you know? How much Snagglepuss did you watch?
I watched all kinds of Snagglepuss cartoons when I was a little kid.
Was Snagglepuss just its own cartoon?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought that was right.
Snagglepuss had his own cartoon. Huckleberry Hound has his own cartoon. Quick Draw McGraw, all of those guys.
And what was the general running theme of the Snagglepuss cartoon?
Snagglepuss was a big pink cat.
Right.
I don't know if he's tiger, leopard, whatever he was. But he always had, it was voiced, I believe, by Dawes Butler. And he did him with a bit of a... Well, the only way I can do it is to do him. He would talk like this. Oh, everything was this. Exit stage left. Stage right even. You know, and he had that kind of affectation to his voice. So one got the impression that he was overly dramatic.
Right. Which then Mark Russell has taken in Exit Stage Left, the Snagglepuss Chronicles, and done what he is known for doing at this point, which is applying a social lens to a character and maybe trying to get a point across. And this book is set in 1953, U.S. locked in a nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union. And Snagglepuss is a stage playwright who obviously, because of the times, I couldn't tell whether the lady he's with is married or his girlfriend, but it's obviously he is gay in the comic because he also has a boyfriend on the side. Mm-hmm. But this being 1953, he cannot be open and out about it. And the book starts to tie into more of, I think, historical issues that were going on in the 50s. You know, they talk about and I wasn't familiar with the two. It's like, I know it's a real like trial that went on. Who were the two people? Because the two people were actually in this, like, executed, and it's okay. On the news here.
Okay, we're talking Julius and Ethel Rosenberg. They were convicted of treason, you know, giving away secrets, being spies, basically, for right. The Russians. And they were executed. It was a real life thing.
Yeah.
They not only do they touch on this, they make a show out of it in this comic book.
Yeah.
Which was a little disturbing once I figured out what the show they were going to was.
Right. So it is. It's very much, it's an exaggerated of what's going on in that time. But, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know. I can't tell you because I haven't done a lot of research into this era. It doesn't seem mm-hmm. like some of it is overly dramatized, though. If you think of what was going on in the McCarthy era and the
not at all. This is they're totally doing the HUAC stuff, the House Un-American Activities Committee, and the communist witch hunts of that era, of which right. you know, all the artists, the actors, the writers, especially the writers, were all. Dragged out and accused of being communists.
Right. So he drags a lot of historical things that actually happened and a lot of historical figures into the comic book. I think in this one, they talk about Lillian Hellman at one point.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They talk about a lot of, like, Dorothy Parker, the blacklisting, mm-hmm. stuff like that. And it was, again, I don't know what I was expecting walking into this, but it's like I knew Mark Russell had a humorous, satirical side.
Yes.
And I knew this was based off of a sort of over the top pink cat Snagglepuss mm-hmm. that I remember from growing up.
Yep.
And man, this is just like straight drama. It's not even really funny. I don't think
not even a little bit. Not even a little bit.
Which
was a disappointment to me.
Well, I get it, because you're thinking Snagglepuss and you're thinking, you know, this guy's MO as a writer. It was interesting. It caught me off guard because it wasn't what I was expecting. But once mm-hmm. I wrapped my brain around it, I'm like, I actually think, again, it's well written. It's well crafted.
Yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with it as a comic. It's not your typical comic. It'd be more like a drama comic, not really, you know, superheroes, not comedy. It's straight drama.
Yeah. Which I did not know was a thing. I got to ask you, though, as somebody who has been a stage actor, though, Jeff, mm-hmm. Snagglepuss in this comic as an author, as a playwright.
Yes.
Yes. No. You're liking the play that they're putting on?
No, thanks. Not my thing. A bit too melodramatic.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's setting up a longer story. And I think it's supposed to be very sort of like a Tennessee Williams type thing where it's like, it mm-hmm. seems like it's very dramatic between the people. I forget what the name of the play is. Do you remember the name of the play?
My Heart is a Kennel of Thieves, I believe. What's the title?
My Heart is a Kennel of Thieves, which I loved. because then they talk about his next one that's coming out, too, that has a title that's just as amazing as that.
You're going to have to refresh me on that one.
Oh, gosh. I'm not going to find it fast enough. Okay. Huckleberry Hound makes an appearance, which is...
yes, actually inexplicably, he does.
Interesting. Interesting. Yeah.
As a novelist.
As a novelist, yes. But overall, I don't know. I don't know where I land on this book right now. I thought it was interesting. And interesting and entertaining are not the same thing. So I don't mm-hmm. know that... Again, if it's somebody who's looking for light entertainment, this is definitely not where you want to go.
Nope. And when you think Snagglepuss, you think, oh, well, this is going to be fun. And it's not even a little bit. I'm sitting there going, okay, take Snagglepuss out of it, take Huckleberry Hound out of it, and you've got exactly the same story. There are really no Snagglepuss-isms in this comic. There are
There's one small one.
Which one?
It's actually because I was on the lookout for it as I was reading it. It is I'm gonna find it. It is how she it's one of the actors on stage and the line of dialogue that they're given.
Oh, okay.
He's like, he said he'd give you a job at his hotel. Night manager, even.
Oh, yes, yes. I did pick up on that. I did. You're right. I stand corrected. There is that one Snagglepuss reference.
The one. But I think you're right. I think you could easily take the talking animals stuff out of this, the references to Snagglepuss, and it would be the same story.
Yep.
And so I'm not 100% certain that grounding it in this property... Actually, I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of the comic book business where they were like, hey, your Flintstones book was good. How about we've also got Snagglepuss here. Make a Snagglepuss one. And he's like, well, I'm not going to do Flintstones over again. And here's another story I've been wanting to tell. Maybe this is a story he's been wanting to tell for a while.
Sure. He's like,
great. I'll just shoehorn Snagglepuss into it. And
Huckleberry but that's Hound. It's square peg in a round hole. It doesn't really work. Like you said earlier, he's shining or he's looking at this story through this lens, and I'm thinking, well, he's getting the lens too close to the ant and he's gonna fry that ant because it's just all story and there's no window dressing of the original characters in there at all. And there was one point where they really could have at least thrown a bone to Huckleberry Hound when he's talking to Snagglepuss's the arranged marriage there. And he assures her that something is perfectly fine or whatever. And they could have very easily had him assure her by starting off saying, oh, my darling, please be sure that I'm fine. The oh, my darling being, of course, a reference to Huckleberry Hound's song that he sang all the time. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling. Oh, my darling, Clementine. And they just it's like missed opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah. Having read back through, you know, the little preparation I did for this show, it was interesting to me because Flintstones was nominated for a couple Eisner Awards, including Best Limited Series, Best Humor Publication, and Book of the Year.
Yeah.
This book came out, and this book was also nominated for things, but it won the 2019 GLAAD Award for Outstanding Comic.
Okay.
You know, this is the first thing that won, and in my mind, I think this comic could have won that award without Snagglepuss being attached to it anyway.
Because of course.
I almost felt like that was a distraction to me.
Well, like, it's, you know what it is? It's, hey, we're going to have steak tonight. And actually, it's hamburger. You know,
I would have to read the rest of the series to see whether and judge completely whether the insertion of this character is necessary for the messaging to hit home. Because I do feel like he's trying to introduce some fantastical elements. Like you say, the execution all of a sudden becomes a thing.
Yes. Where
people are getting in.
And buying tickets to sit and watch them. Yeah.
Right. And so maybe this goes to a place where that fantastical piece needs to be there. But again, I think we've gotten it. It's like, it's, I thought it was a good, solid book.
But yes.
The insertion of the Snagglepuss character was an unnecessary taking me out of the moment where I wanted to be in it.
Absolutely. And unless they kind of pay that off later, there's really no point. Just write the comic that you want to write. And it's perfectly good. It's perfectly fine. You're telling a story that's very interesting and probably should be told so that future generations know what happened there. But Snagglepuss?
Yeah.
You don't need it.
All right. Well, it is now then time for us to exit stage left.
Stage right, even.
And when we come back, we will cover the third book in this trio of Mark Russell tales, which is going to be the Wonder Twins.
Great Caesar's Ghost! You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast.
Wonder Twins, number one. Exiled from their home planet, shape-changing alien heroes Zan and Jaina must navigate life as students at Morris High School, where they're even bigger outsiders than the normal awkward teens they try to befriend. Under the watchful eye of Superman, the brother and sister start their internship performing monitor duty at the Hall of Justice, while also working to overcome the pitfalls of Zan's brash confidence and Jaina's shyness.
all while the Justice League battles one of Superman's oldest foes. If you think you know the Wonder Twins, think again. This book takes the form of The Unexpected.
Alrighty then, that is the third book in the Mark Russell bibliography. Gosh, I keep trying to come up with new words. I'm doing okay. I think I'm doing okay. Give myself a pat on the back for that one.
Sure, why not? On my head.
The third book in the Mark Russell bibliography that we're talking today is The Wonder Twins, which was published in 2019.
Okay. So he's had 10 years or so of writing under his belt by the time he gets to this one.
I think we said Flintstones was 2016. So this is 2019. So
yeah,
he's powering through it. And this is his third
property. I thought you said 2006. Sorry.
This is his third property from Hanna-Barbera that he's adapting in a, you know, I don't know if you'd say it's you're the Wonder Twins expert. Is this a Hanna-Barbera property or is this a, who owns that whole deal?
Well, DC must own the characters now, but they were created for the Super Friends TV show in the, I don't know, second, third or fourth season, somewhere in there, as the way for the children watching the show to have a kind of an avatar in the show to identify with.
Okay. Cause that's what always puzzles me. I'm like, why, like with Star Wars, let's put a little kid in it because then kids have to identify with. I was like, when I was a little kid, I didn't want to identify with a little kid. I wanted to identify with Superman. When I was a kid, I wanted to be Luke Skywalker. I didn't want to be like 10-year-old whatever. I was 10 already. I wanted to be the superhero. You don't need to put in a younger character for me to relate to.
That's- yeah, it's all about hero worship and fantasizing when you're a little kid.
Right. So the title actually of this book, this is the one that stood out to me. It's like, I don't always clue into when you open a comic that every story usually has its own title. And the title of the Wonder Twins issue one is It Gets Weirder. And so tell us a little bit. So people, I know more about the Wonder Twins than I knew about Cyclops. Mm-hmm. Zan and Jaina, right?
Zan and Jaina and their monkey Gleek.
Who's not in this issue.
So oh, well, he is, though. Okay. You can see a picture of him at one point.
Okay.
But he's not a character in the issue. You're correct.
Spoiler alert. I like this comic so much. I already went out and bought the full 6-issue miniseries. Or the first 6 issues in individual comic forms. Gleek is going to show up.
Okay. Can't say that I blame you for going out and buying this one. Because this, the Flintstones was kind of in the middle. Snagglepuss is at the very bottom for me. This was at the top. And it was great.
So the Wonder Twins, Zan and Jaina from what, Exor, the
planet. Apparently, they never talk about it on the TV show. So I was getting backstory in this, going, "Oh, okay, that's what's going on."
And they are twins, and their power is it's not rings. I always thought they had rings on, but they just do like a fist bump.
Yeah, I mean they did in the TV show, but that's apparently now. Here's the thing. On the TV show, they had to touch their hands together or their rings, whatever, to activate their changeling powers.
Right.
Apparently, in this comic book, they don't necessarily need each other to activate their changeling powers.
Yeah. It's unclear from the first issue how that works, but they and then she can change into it's actually they like describe it in here too. Like, I don't know. It was kind of cool to me that where the superheroes are describing what their powers are. And it's like, she can become any animal, basically.
Yes.
She can become any form of water.
Well, that's useful.
which was the old joke all the time, right? Like how useful. They always found ways to make it useful in the cartoon mildly. It's like in the cartoon, it's like she's an eagle and he's water in a bucket that the eagle is carrying.
Yes. Yeah, and it's like, well, it's a good thing she's, you know, ambulatory because you'd be sitting here in a bucket and doing nothing for anybody.
But it did include all forms of ice as well.
Well, of course, any form of water. He could be steam. I think I saw him as steam once on the cartoon.
What is that good for?
Nothing. Not much.
Unless you need to rise up into the air through small crevices, I guess.
Or cloud up a mirror or something. I don't know.
Part of you gets stuck on the ceiling on the way through. I don't know. But I did like the Morris High School, the Wolf Pack. That's pretty good. And it looks like a pack of cigarettes. It looks like a pack of cigarettes.
Oh, like Philip Morris cigarettes?
It's Morris High School. They're the Wolf Pack, and it looks like two heads coming out of a cigarette pack.
Okay.
And this one right away, because this is the first page. There's all the Mark Russell traits. There's all the Easter eggs in the background. There's the sign for the coming circus featuring sad elephants.
I did notice that one. That was good.
The fall dance theme for their prom poster for the fall dance is Delusions of Grandeur. But this story takes place in their high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm gonna flip back and forth a little bit. So tell me if this is distracting. But it's like in the TV show in the cartoon they were part of. It wasn't Super Friends at the time, or was it Super Friends?
It was Super Friends. It was always Super Friends when it was a Saturday morning TV show. It was never referred to as Justice League until they did the Justice League animated series.
So it was Super Friends. Xan and Jane were there. I don't think they ever explained why they were there.
Nope. They just showed up one season.
And then this book is sort of going to be their backstory. And sort of like you would expect if they're high school age characters, they can't just be literally just hanging out at the Hall of Justice all day. What do? Well, of course they go to high school.
Well, and that's just it. That's just it. They were alien teenagers. And so my 7-year-old mind was perfectly fine with them not having to go to school or do anything. But it makes perfect sense that they would to go to school. And it's a lot of fun watching them do it.
Right. Clever introduction to their backstory is it's a school day and everybody's giving a talk to the class of here's where I'm from and a little bit of lesson. The one kid's what for Dutch kid. He talks about all the chocolates. And
he looks like the Dutch boy from the paint cans.
Right. He's like trying to let me educate you about my people. Dutch people like mayonnaise on French fries.
Oh. Yuck.
And so Xan is out there and he's like, I'm from Exor and here's what happens on Exor. And this is where we're introduced to the concept of, is it Thunderlust?
Thunderlust. Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like a good title for an 80s song.
Thunderlust. But I mean, I equate it to, hey, that's what happens on alien planets. Like what was the thing that happens on, with Spock when he goes back to his home planet every 10 years.
That would be the Pon Far. Exactly right. The right? Blood fever.
That's kind of what Thunderlust is.
That is exactly what Thunderlust is.
They hear the thunder and it's time to make babies.
Yep. And he talks about it rather, rather bluntly.
Right. But I mean, it's kind of funny. He's from there. It's normal there. Why wouldn't it be normal to talk about here? And the teacher's like, not so much here.
Yeah. Apparently, though, it's only a thing that the adults of Exor experience.
Right. Which is a plot point later. And then so they go to high school in the morning. They show up at the Hall of Justice. Like Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman are sitting around. And they're like, wait, who are these kids? What are their powers? What are they doing here?
Uh-huh. And Superman's like, well, you know, look, I owe their dad a favor.
Right. He owes him a favor. Did they say what the favor was for? I don't even know.
It looks as if there is some backstory as to why Xan and Jaina need to leave Exor, and they kind of walk right up to it, and then they don't give you any more. And I'm thinking that more is coming in the later issues.
Yeah, I would hope so, because it had a lot of introduction. It's got a lot of like superheroes just wandering around the Hall of Justice. And like,
yeah, did you see El Dorado in there?
I did. That's pretty amazing. I'm waiting for some of those other marginal heroes to show up. What was the Super Samurai?
Just Samurai.
Oh, just Samurai?
Samurai. There was Apache Chief. Black Vulcan, because they couldn't get the rights to Black Lightning.
Right.
So they made Black Vulcan. It's a big, long, convoluted story, but they just made a character named Black Vulcan, who is exactly the same character.
Which he does show up in this comic, too. Which I liked, because they explain like, why is there a Hall of Justice? Why? And they're like, well, a couple of reasons. Number one, they're like the dispatch center for superheroes. It's like, right. Number one is we're not all going to show up at the same crime at the same time. Like, yes. One dude robbing a bank and Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, the Flash are all there to stop one dude who's robbing a bank, and then to make sure the heroes aren't sent, that they're sent to the right ones. And so, like, Black Vulcan shows up and he's like, hey, listen, it's a sea monster, and you know, water and electricity don't really go together. So
what's Aquaman doing right now? Could he maybe come over here and take care of this?
So make sure that when there's a crisis, the right heroes go to the right place, and we're not all swarming the ball. And then it's the right person, which I thought was kind of cool. And then, you know, the super, what is the computer that they used to have?
The Trouble Alert. Yeah.
Is now also a little bit of a sad character.
Well, technology's advanced a little bit in 40 years. So.
Right. And this computer is still running like 64-bit or something.
Yeah. I don't know. And all it does is pretty much just play music for them.
Right. Right. It's like, you can't do anything except maybe play some Philip Glass. But this book is like just fun all the way through. I mean, you go through all the anecdotes. Zan's on the hockey team, not necessarily in the way you would expect.
That's like saying Adam Sandler was on the football team and the water boy.
Well, he's excited because he's going to be a big star. He's got these delusions of how he's going to be popular and like be like a teenage boy. He's going to be like popular. He's on the
absolutely
hockey team, walking the halls like big man on campus, pet alligator on a leash.
Which I can only assume is his sister doing him a favor.
You know, that actually is a good call. Maybe it is. I don't know. And he's got the cool nickname H2O.
H2O.
But you know, the biggest trouble that kind of winds up in this, it's going down the path of like there's something going on where like I can't ever pronounce the name of Superman's main villain from the fifth dimension, Mr.
Mixius Pidalic,
right?
I think. And I don't know.
So it shows up, there's these fifth dimensional murders, and it's like, this is going to be all mixed up, and this guy's impossible to get rid of. The biggest problem in the book is all of a sudden Zan becoming a man when the Thunderlust strikes and being embarrassed in front of all of his friends.
Yeah. And getting a great nickname in the process.
Right. And then like the whole story of the super villain is wrapped up in like four panels. They figured out solve it without any of the superheroes around. And that's like, it's beautiful. Cause it's just like, that is an afterthought. We took care of that. No problem. We got bigger problems. We're teenagers in high school.
Yeah. The whole thing was they were, the Justice League is trying to make a tachyon pulse beam to send him back to the fifth dimension.
Right. Right.
And
do that. It can capture him. Cause of course, getting him to say his name backwards is usually the only way they can get rid of him. And Superman makes some comment about like, what is this? Like 1970 or something like that. Like it's impossible. How did you get somebody to say their own name backwards when it's that complicated of a name?
Right.
But it happened millions of times in the comics and everybody
absolutely
tricked him. And they're like, there's no way you're going to trick him into doing it. Let's make this thing that's got a 1 in 100 chance of destroying the entire universe. But
well, you know, it's worth it. Get rid of the imp from the fifth dimension. Why not?
Right. And even the nod at the very end, why does it remember? Like they record it and play it backwards or whatever. And he's like, this is how it works. Like, well, I guess it is for this comic. This is how it works. On now. Not heavy.
Dealing with
issues, but like issues that aren't as deep. And having characters where like the character themselves lends itself to telling about that particular issue. And this is like not a lot of social commentary in this book. It's a lot about the trouble of being a teenager. And I'm sure it seems like they're teeing up more will come. Like what was the trouble on the planet that forced him to leave? I'm assuming, knowing Mark Russell's history, that will turn into some kind of social dialogue. But
probably
overall, I thought just a fun book, a fun read, and an easy read. And you don't have to know any comics continuity. Kind of helps if you know who the Wonder Twins are and about the old Super Friends TV show.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to.
And that's the only thing you can do is just know who they are, because the Super Friends show never gave you any serious character development, gave you nothing at all. It's just here they are, this is what they do, and here's how they do it, and that's it. So this book didn't come into it with a whole lot of history like say the Flintstones or or Snagglepuss have, because you've seen all those cartoons of certain age, you know, and so you expect and you understand how they behave. And then you don't quite get that behavior in the comic book. So you're like, oh, okay, it does this is a blank slate. They can do whatever they want and it works perfectly fine. And they in fact give you backstory that was never there before. So they're actually making the characters deeper than they ever were. And it's a great book. I can't wait to see more.
Okay. Well, these should also be available at your library. I already went out and started buying the single issues just because I want to have the single issues. That's like a thing. I'm not even buying the collected version, which you can also read online on Comixology. These are available about anywhere you'd want to get a comic book. They're not hard to find. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take a quick break. Jeff is going to talk to you about the comic book picks of the week. And then we will be right back to say goodbye for this episode.
You're listening to the Casual Comics Cast. You want to get nuts? Come on, let's get nuts. And now, it's time for the tremendous trio of treasures. Three new comics that we recommend for all of our loyal listeners.
First,
my bad, number 5 from Ahoy Comics. Last chance to get in on the ground floor of the important new superhero universe, or regret it for the rest of your worthless life. See, tragic death, all-out fighting, flashing lights, fast food, the climactic showdown between the Chandelier and Emperor King. All this, and the amazing but fake friendly letters page. Caution, heads will explode in My Bad Number 5, by Mark Russell, Bryce Engman, and Peter Krause.
Then,
Count Crowley, Amateur Midnight Monster Hunter Number 1, from Dark Horse. It's been a hell of a week for Jerry Bartman. She lost her job, crashed her car, took the only gig available hosting the Midnight Monster Show, dismembered a zombie. No big deal. Now, to protect the people she loves, she's going to have to take a crash course in monster hunting. And quickly, a vengeful vampire just booked a first-class flight into town. It's the Lois Lane Jessica Jones mashup that you didn't know you needed. It's Count Crowley, Amateur Midnight Monster Hunter.
Finally,
Venom, Lethal Protector Number 1 from Marvel Comics. An epic return! Before Carnage and Space Gods, Clones and Toxins, and the revelation that he was a father, Eddie Brock was a down-on-his-luck reporter who had tried to take his own life and been saved by an extraterrestrial alien. This all-new story is set in the character's earliest days and tells a new, horrifying tale that not only revisits the wicked web-slinger's past, but hints at what's to come in his future. And that's your Casual Comics Cast tremendous trio of treasures for this episode. Pick them up wherever fine comic books are sold today.
All right, so those were the comic book picks of the week, everybody. Hope you get to wherever you buy your regular comics or read your comics. Please don't just stand in the store and read them and not pay the retailer, because that's just plain annoying.
Yeah, that's not cool. Not cool.
But find a way to read them, or don't. I mean, literally, what do I care? Big deal. Those skin off my back. I'm going to read them. I hope you do, because I'll probably be talking about them at some point. But
absolutely, yeah. And your local comic book purveyors, they're nice people. They're good people. They need to eat too. So buy the book.
Not life or death or nothing. It's not like I'm going to come over to your house and yell at you if you don't.
Well, no. That
that would get pricey after a while. Traveling city to city, door to door, and be like, you did not buy the book I said to buy.
It's like Jay and Silent Bob.
I'm not even saying buy kids. It. I'm saying read it. Right. Okay, so Mark Russell, you still a fan, Jeff? You know, keep picking up his books when you find them?
Yeah, I absolutely. And, you know, just because my personal take on those other two books, the Snagglepuss and the Flintstones, wasn't really all that hot, it doesn't mean that they weren't good. They weren't worth reading. They absolutely are.
We're not saying you're a bad person, Mark Russell.
Oh, no, we're fans. We like his work. He's great.
So I had them ranked kind of in the same order you did. I think I like Flintstones a lot more than you did.
I think so.
I think to me, Flintstones and Wonder Twins was kind of a toss up. I really liked Flintstones, and I'm probably actually more interested to finish that story. As much as I like Wonder Twins, it's a lighter read.
Yes.
And I think Wonder Twins, I'll probably read one issue a week or something like that when I pick them up. Flintstones, I'll probably sit down and go straight through, because I feel like I actually enjoyed that. Sounds like quite a bit more than you did. I still have a slight edge to Wonder Twins just based off of the number ones. I think Mark Russell was, he's maybe getting his feet under him a little more. He wasn't taking it so seriously. Mm-hmm. But I'll have to see when I finish the two series, which one I think is better. And then I'm with you. I think Snagglepuss is lower on the list for me, not because it's not a good book, but because I think the shoehorning in of the licensed character was distracting from the story more than it was additive to the story.
Yeah.
All right. So that wraps us up for another episode. Jeff, thanks for talking comics with me again.
Thanks for having me. Always happy to be here.
Thanks for talking nonsense with me again.
Well, that always happy to do that.
All right. And we will be back to talk at you again soon. Thanks for listening, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
And cheers, everyone. If you've got a comic book you'd like to hear us talk about, please let us know on Twitter at Casual Comics Guy, at our blog, casualcomicsguide.com, or on our Facebook page, Casual Comics Cast. So until next time, stay safe and stay frosty, people.